This is The Unseen, and I'm your host, Mike Cleland. This week on The Unseen, I'm happy to talk with Brett Oldham and his wife, Julie McVeigh Oldham. They recently published a book titled Afterlife Encounters, Ghosts, Spirits, and Near-Death Experiences. This is a collection of really cool, really remarkable stories about the mystical events that surround death. Both Julie and Brett are paranormal investigators, and together they created this really wonderful book. I mean, there's no other way to say it. This is a really heartening, touching book. It's really uplifting. And I think that means a lot given the subject matter of the book, which so many of us see as something so dark. I mean, yes, death involves grieving, and that's important. But also important is knowing that there's something much, much more to the story. Brett has had a lifetime of UFO contact, and these experiences, these sometimes very frightening experiences, have allowed for a deeper insight into death, which is, of course, the ultimate mystery. Our conversation dips in and out of this and other mysteries, including the UFO encounters, and there is an overlap within these seemingly divergent subjects. And that was pretty much the focus of this interview, how death seems to overlap with so much that can be tied back into a human consciousness, deeper human consciousness. This audio interview was recorded in April of 2019. Please enjoy. Brett, Julie, I want to thank you so much for saying yes to this interview. It means a lot to me.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, we appreciate it, Mike.
Oh, I'm delighted. I'm delighted to do this. And so I have been, over the last few weeks here, I have been reading bits and pieces of your book. Full disclosure, I have not read the entire thing. And it's really nice. It's a really wonderful book. It's a very positive, beautiful set of stories, and I was kind of craving that when I opened it.
Well, we tried to do that on purpose. You know, there's so much negative stuff that's associated with anything to do with the afterlife. We're inundated with it on reality TV, all these ghost shows. Everything's a demon, and you know, they have new shows out now that we've been seeing advertised, and I just shake my head at, you know, Ghost Bait's coming up, and Porter's Still Hell, and all this stuff, and you know, I knew from my years of experience, and Julie's, you know, she's studied a lot in this field, and we knew that there's a lot of positive aspects that's not being addressed. And everybody's kind of fallen into this Hollywood reality of it. And that's not the true reality. And so we wanted to put out a book that covered these kind of, as you said, it's heartwarming stuff. It's very positive, because not everything to do with the afterlife is negative entities.
Right. And after interviewing so many people for this book, that's what we found. We found a lot of heartwarming stories, a lot of comforting stories that really resonated with the loved one that was receiving information from the other side.
And was it mostly parents and children, or siblings or spouses?
It was all across the board.
Yeah, it was across the board. I mean, we had people talking about their friends coming mm-hmm. back. You know, we have a few stories in there about that. So it was pretty across the board.
Some mothers, a lot of relatives, great aunts, great uncles, fathers.
And you are both, I guess I hate, I mean, the term ghost hunter, is that appropriate?
Well, yeah, I'm kind of like with you on that term as well. You know,
you're kind of stuck with it, but what's the term you like?
The connotation of that just brings up some of the wrong images sometimes, right?
Oh, absolutely. So what's the term you like?
Just paranormal investigators in general, because there's such a wide spectrum to it. You know, I mean, I don't think people say they hunt ghosts, but in my experience, you know, we're surrounded by spirit and ghost all the time. And we tried to set a difference between what ghosts and spirits are in this book, whereas like we believe that ghosts are like lost souls that get trapped in some sort of middle dimension after death. And the reasons or there's a multitude of reasons. I mean, it could be fear. If their religious beliefs lead them this direction. It could be fear of hell if they fully crossed over. A lot of times it's a strong attachment to people, places, things in this world. And then they eventually realize that they're trapped and they either give up and want to be left alone. And sometimes they make a plea for the living. So a lot of hauntings are that. They're just trying to get our attention for help in whichever way they can find. Whereas we think a spirit is a soul that's fully crossed over and they choose to return for a short time. And we gave example after example in this book where they came to comfort a loved one, sometimes warn a loved one. But most of the time they wanted to assure the living that they're all right. And sometimes it's just simply to visit.
And I've, you know, so you hear these stories and it's nice to have them in one big collection like this. And just because you can kind of compare and contrast, you know, they're not the same story, but they certainly have the same mood and the same vibe.
Yeah, definitely. And that happened also. That's why we want to include a couple of ghost stories. And also there's a multitude of spirit communication, you know, spirits coming back to the loved ones and near-death experience, because that is also an afterlife encounter.
So the people who have these experiences, let's just talk about the near-death experiences. Do they talk about any sort of heightened psychic abilities after, or a change in their spirituality, or a new awareness, let's say?
They do. They do.
I knew they did. I had to ask the question.
Yes.
It was almost across the board. Repeatedly, that happened.
Right. And if someone that had an NDE already had some abilities prior to the near-death experience, when they came back, those experiences or their psychic abilities seem to have been enhanced by the NDE. So if they didn't have them before, they did. If they did have them, they were enhanced.
And this shows up in other, I mean, this is the focus of my research has been on the UFO lore. And this is something I found also, is that people who have had psychic abilities oftentimes will have a UFO contact and their psychic abilities will be enhanced. And I will tell you that people who have had both UFO contact and a near-death experience are usually like off the charts in their psychic abilities.
Yeah, I agree. Obviously, from my experience as an alien abductee, you know, I found that personally to be true, and also from the many people that I've dealt with and counseled and talked to over the years, especially people that have been taken, who I call lifers, you know, people that's been taken multiple times, no doubt about it. And it shows up in different realms of psychic, enhanced psychic awareness. But, you know, some, you know, maybe clairaudience, some may be a medium, that type of thing. Some may be all of it, but it's always there. And that is a commonality that we found between the near-death experiences of people who have had that experience and with the alien abductees.
Yeah. And it's interesting how many people I've actually met who've had both.
Yes.
And so here, have either of you had experiences with a near-death experience?
No near-death experience.
No.
Okay. Wondering. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would think, you know, the inspiration to do something like this, but you do have the research into the paranormal lore. Hey, if you want to share one of the stories from the book, that would be wonderful.
Well, there's so many, it's hard to.
We could start with an NDE.
Yeah.
That sounds great. Yeah.
Okay. So we interviewed a lady who was undergoing just a routine knee surgery. She wasn't worried about it. She had had a couple of surgeries before. She was anesthetized. And she said at that point, everything went dark. But then things changed and she noticed she could hear things. And she could hear them saying, you know, her blood pressure, her blood, her pulse rate is 200 beats a minute. And she noticed herself rising up toward the door frame and she could see her body on the table. Her eyes were closed, but she could see everything that was going on around her. And she said she saw one of the nurses run out of the room and she knew, she had a sense of knowing that she wasn't going to get another doctor, that she was going to tell her daughter what was going on with her mother. And the lady, the NDE, she said she could see, she had like X-ray vision. She could see down through the floors, and she saw the nurse run in to tell her daughter that her mother was not well, not doing well.
She'd went into cardiac arrest because she had an arrhythmia condition that the doctors didn't know.
Exactly. And she said she saw her daughter put her face in her hands and start crying and start praying for her. And she said as soon as that happened, things kind of shifted again, and she found herself in a white mist. She said the mist enveloped her. And then she perceived, and she described it as angelic beings. She said there were rows and rows of all these beings. And the beings stopped at what she felt was God's throne. She said she felt the presence of God as if he filled up all the space, as if God was the universe, as if God was everything. And she said if she had had a body, she would have fallen to her knees. She was so humbled. She wanted to ask to come back because she felt like she still had things to do. And she said she got the courage up to ask God, can I return? I want to help people. And she said the next thing she knew, she was back in the body. She woke up 24 hours later in intensive care, and she stayed in intensive care for 8 days after that. But it was a really incredible story.
And how did her life change after that?
Well, she actually ended up writing a book, something that she didn't even know how to work the software and to do it, but she felt strongly compelled to do that.
She also had an awakening, I think, as an empath. She started feeling kind of energies around people.
Yeah, so she started like counseling people. Her psychic awareness was greatly enhanced, and she would start picking up these things about people, and she knew that she could help them. She started a radio show, dealing with all aspects of the paranormal, which she's still currently doing.
And what's her name?
Deborah Jane East.
Okay, interesting. Great.
Yeah, everybody, if you could look her up. And, she pretty much dedicated herself to doing what she could to find more truths about what happens when we die. And also she really became interested in the UFO phenomena because she saw the parallel between the two as well. In fact, she mentioned just what you did earlier about the so many experiencers that she had talked to also had near-death experiences. So she kind of backed that up as well.
And that's just remarkable, because I mean, how many people, like when you statistically, how many people really have a near-death experience? I mean, it must be I couldn't even begin to guess, but I suspect the percentage is very low. And then the same thing, how many people actually have UFO contact experiences? I mean, there obviously a lot of people are having these, but the overall percentage of our population must be really low. And to have both of them.
Yeah, it would be really low.
And the congruencies don't really end there, because what we've also found is like these people that had these NDEs, when they came back, they shied away from organized dogmatic religion, and they became more spiritual. And that's sort of the same thing that happens to a lot of experiencers. Like your whole perception of religion changes, as does your perception of the earth itself,
and the care for the earth and the environment and animals. And
that was almost the same way with people who had the NDEs. So there's these commonalities. That's really intriguing.
And I'm sure I'll talk about it a little bit more in the next segment, but there's a story I want to share as far as that sums up this overlap in a little bit. What about healing abilities? Do people come back with any kind of healing abilities? This is something I found in my own UFO research.
There were several that have gotten into Reiki energy healing. We had a couple, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. Whether it be, sort of like the energy healing thing or into counseling type thing. you know, they sort of became that level of healing where, you know, would be not so much like abilities, you know, where they could miraculously heal somebody, but they would use these different modalities of healing.
Sure. Oh, yeah. This is exactly what I have been finding in my own UFO research. Hey, we are going to talk a little bit more after this short break. We are at the 15-minute mark, and for non-members, there will be a few commercials, but for members, we will be right back.
The new unknown country is here, and it has so much to offer. Our huge archive of Dreamland, plus the full run of William Henry's revelations, Anne Streber's mysterious powers and her incredible contactee interviews, Whitley's Communion, Secret School, Transformation, and Majestic ebooks, his powerful meditations, and so much more. Plus every week, the full subscriber versions of Whitley's Dreamland, Mike Clellan's The Unseen, and monthly, Jeremy Vaney's The Experience. We offer subscriptions either by credit card or PayPal, either automatic renewal or annual or longer subscriptions without auto-renew. Plus, it's easy to cancel if you wish. Do it right in your account. Plus, a live chat every week on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Pacific, and so much more. Go to unknowncountry.com right now and subscribe. Keep this incredible site going and have a great time doing it.
UnknownCountry.com subscribers have access to a vast treasury of information. Listen to what Dr. Robert Schock said. He's an expert on the past, and for that reason, he also knows a great deal about the future.
We are re-entering, as you say, a debris field, and when you have a debris field like this, it enters the solar system, it energizes the solar system as you have things going into the sun, even clouds of dust particles, for instance, it will energize the sun, it will destabilize the sun. This is what we saw at the end of the last ice age in approximate terms, about 13,000 years ago.
And just in the past few days, more enormous meteors have been sighted. And this goes on continuously, more and more every year. We live in a time of great change in a world that doesn't like to look at things as they are. UnknownCountry.com offers extraordinary information, a vast archive that you cannot find anywhere else. Subscribe today. Help keep this website going, because without you, there is and can be no us. Go to unknowncountry.com right now. Click on the subscribe tab. Get started.
You've probably heard the music for years. It's the theme song for Dreamland. But you may not know the name of the piece, The O of Pleasure. Or the name of the composer, Ray Lynch. Ray Lynch is a 3-time Billboard Award winner. Ray is also the composer of the platinum album, Deep Breakfast. Pandora calls Ray one of the most influential artists in New Age pop and adult alternative circles. For music that will move your heart and set your spirit soaring, visit www.raylynch.com.
Welcome back to the free Dreamland segment. We are speaking with Brett and Julie about their new book, Afterlife Encounters. Hey, just before the break, I brought up something and I want to bring it up now. Do you know Ray Hernandez?
I don't know him personally, but I know, of course, who his name is.
Great. Well, I've met him a few times, and he's a very energetic guy, let me tell you. And he has started an organization that is doing research into experiences mostly. And it started out as like a UFO thing, and then that just went all over the map and got connected to all kinds of things. So he's very clear that it is not a UFO investigating organization. But he had an experience. He lives in Miami, driving in his car, making a left turn in traffic, listening to a audio thing on the radio. And then all of a sudden, click, he's like in this completely other realm. And he has this magnificent, hyper-real, vivid experience of like seeing a giant Ferris wheel, right? It's like a huge, giant turning wheel. You know, so there's an axle, and then there's these spokes, and then there, at the end of the spokes is the wheel, and each little spoke has like a different word written on it. In one, and I have them listed here. I went to his site just before we started our talk here. And one of the things says UFO contact. And one of the giant spokes says out of body experience. And another one says lucid dreams, mystical meditation, remote viewing, shamanic journeying, channeling, spirit guides, and the near death experience. And so these things are all turning. And then he goes to the hub, to the axle, to the core. And he gets this intense knowing that the core is human consciousness. And then click, he's like finishing his left turn. He felt like he was gone 20 minutes. He's like, all of a sudden he's finishing his left turn. The radio is playing the exact same thing that it had been what felt like 20 minutes earlier. And he's like left with this cinematic download of all of these connected things that, and I sense that too. Obviously they're not the same thing. But they have an overlap and a flavor and a kind of tone to them that they all somehow seem connected. And that's a nice way for me to visualize it, right? So they're each a separate spoke, but they all connect to the same hub.
Yeah, it is. And we found out because we actually touched on OBEs as well, because we did find some similarities between certain people having out-of-body experiences that correlated with near-death experience, although they didn't physically die. So there does seem to be this consciousness overlap in a lot of these things. And that isn't, you know, an interesting way that he saw it. It kind of reminded me of, you know, Grant Cameron's downloads. When you said download, you know, I was thinking that before you said it, because it kind of reminded me of those kind of things that happen where people just get these instant downloads that Grant often talks about. And we wonder, you know, where they come from. And it even reminded me of one of my experiences, you know, just briefly touching on the abduction thing, where I had asked a tall gray one time during one of my experiences who his God was. And he, without hesitation, he answered telepathically, "We are all one with the one who is all." And, you know, I think that sort of ties in with the centerpiece of the consciousness that Ray was talking about. That it all is the all encompassing everything, and these are all just spokes of consciousness off that.
And I want to bring something up, Brett. You and I talked a little bit, not much, before doing this interview, and you told me you have chosen to step away from the UFO scene, and I've read both your other books, and those are tough books. Those are heavy and oppressive. And there's a side of the UFO field, which is very much love and light and beautiful, angelic, magical wonderfulness in a way. And then there's some stuff that is very tough and hard for me to, there's a dark side to this too. And I know a lot of people, they want to only look at the love and light side and deny or ignore the dark stuff. So let me just say, I understand fully your reasons to choose to step away. And that was part of the reason when I said it earlier at the beginning of this talk, I was so delighted that this book is so life affirming in many ways.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to, I have to step away. I may step away permanently, and I may not, you know. But right now, I'm at a place in life that that I felt I needed to, and I've kind of been on a hiatus for several months now, turned down a lot of stuff. There's a multitude of reasons for it, but I found that it was nice to be able to focus on a different aspect of this. I found a lot of tie-ins. You know, there's a dimensional aspect to the abduction phenomena. I believe that, you know, we are definitely being taken through these portals. I think that is one of the reasons that we have the change going through these portals, because I think that's what's happening to these people that's having these near-death experiences. Some of them describe the tunnels. Not everybody.
Some describe way stations.
Yeah.
Like there was a point of no return type thing, and they were at that way station.
Yeah, and so, you know, there's definite dimensional aspects to both, and I think that does have something to do with these things tying in. But I had, because many abductees have, especially after their experiences, they have a lot of paranormal activity start up, and that's exactly what happened to me and how I got so interested in it at a very early age. And started seeking answers for that before I even knew the tie-in. But I think that what happens is that our energy, I think we start vibrating at a faster rate. And I think the same thing happens with the people that go through an NDE because of the dimensional aspect of it. And we sort of become a magnet for those in, you know, through the veil, because I think the veil is very thin. A lot of the activity that we attract, it's not negative. You know, I mean, I've spent a lot of years before I ever went public with my abduction stories in the paranormal field. And basically because, you know, I have this ability to, which I don't have never really advertised. You know, I do have some mediumship ability. I've really attract electronic voice phenomena. And I've used that to my whole goal for coming out publicly with abduction and in the paranormal realm has been to help those here and those have the other people that's having these experiences. And that's one of the reasons that we wanted to do this book, was to show, like we said earlier, that not everything is dark. And it's the same thing with the abduction field. You know, there is both elements to it. And in the end, it depends on how you handle it mentally and physically, how you're going to let it affect you. And that's one of the things that I tried to do in my second book, was to give a lot of coping mechanisms in that book for other people that's had negative experiences with it. And this is the same thing with, that we wanted to do with afterlife encounters, was to leave people, at least help alleviate some of the fear that goes along with all this.
Yeah. And in your first book, your sort of memoir of your experiences, I remember that was I was very struck by the fact that you said you were sort of a magnet in the ghost investigations, that you were genuinely tapped into that stuff in a way that the other people around you weren't.
Yeah. I mean, there's certain people that I've worked with throughout the years, you know, and they'll attest to that. You know, I can go in somewhere, and I'm not trying to say this in a bragging sort of way. It just is. And I'll come out with, you know, 4 to 5 times the amount of electronic voice phenomena that I've recorded than anybody else in the group. And I just think it all stems back to my abduction experiences, because I found that time and time again with other people. You know, we've had, Julie's witnessed things. You know, we wrote about a couple of our own personal experiences in the book. And I think that it was important to know, like, we're not just writing about this, but we've lived some of this stuff.
Well, give an example of one of those experiences.
You do your grandmother?
Yeah, but you also the restaurant, Irene, too. Well, this one wasn't in the book, but this one was really interesting, too. We went to a restaurant about 6 to 8 months ago, and immediately I can always tell when he's hearing something or tuning into something. He has a look on his face, kind of a faraway look. And I said, what's going on? And he was having an interchange with a woman named Irene, who had frequented the restaurant, who liked the building, who liked to be around, who liked to see people happy, and who liked to socialize. So you had a little bit of a conversation with her before she went on to go to other tables.
Yeah, the building had been around. We didn't know it at the time, but it had been
a lot of different things.
A lot of different things. But at that area, I believe that she had came back when it was sort of like a soda shop type thing for young people, you know, and she had fond memories of that, you know. But we had another incident that happened when we were here at the house with Julie's grandmother. And we were just sitting in the den and talking, and Julie kind of was sort of laying, and I was sitting looking straight out, and she had her back to the nearby door frame. And out of nowhere, like I see this this woman who looked real peek around the corner and then peek back. And, you know, you asked me.
I said, what are you looking at?
And I told her, I
saw somebody.
I saw somebody. And so we jumped up because we thought somebody had broke into the house. And we went around, looked everywhere, couldn't find, I mean, everything was secure. So I started describing the lady that I had seen. And we tried to reenact it. I mean, I always try to debunk everything that happens, which is the wise thing to do for any of this stuff. And
sure, the simplest explanation, if you can get that out of the way.
Exactly.
I agree.
So I asked Julie, I says, well, here's, you know, how she did. I kind of showed her and I said, can you reenact it? And let me see what it looks like. And when you're doing it, and maybe we can get at least find out her size and, you know, that type of thing like that. So she did it. And I sat back in the same spot I was at. And as Julie kind of peeked around the corner like that, I noticed a striking resemblance in profiles. And I was like, well, that's really weird. I said, the lady I saw, and she looked young. I mean, she looked like in her prime, like, you know, 35 or something, and had short, dark hair. And I even, you know, described a color of blouse that she had on. And I said, man, that's really weird. Her profile looked a lot like yours. And she says, well, how tall was she? And so we measured Julie on the door frame. And I said, she wasn't as tall as you. She was shorter, this lady I saw. And so the only thing I could think of was that it had to be, you know, some kind of spirit visitation, except that this house has no history of that. And you had never had anything happen in here.
No.
She was living here before we got married. And I had never, I've been able to feel energy and I never felt anything in here at all. So we were like really puzzled by that. And then Julie left the room and she comes back and you showed me a picture and she said, did it look like her, this lady? And I looked at it and I said, yeah, that's her. And she says, well, that's my grandmother. And this is a picture of her when she was younger. Because what had been happening before that, you want to talk about your brother had visited.
Yeah, my brother had visited there where they lived, and the home and the surrounding had kind of fallen in disrepair. And I had just been really missing her lately at that point, and I had even dreamed about her a couple of times. So I had really been missing her a lot, and we felt that she came to comfort me. And the interesting thing about that visit was the visit was on the day it was her birthday. And I told Brett after all that, I said, you know what, today was her birthday. So she chose her birthday to show up for me to tell me, I see you.
I'm with you.
I'm with you. I'm still here. So it was really, really comforting, actually.
That is very comforting. That is very comforting. It's very lovely. And I think we live in a world where these stories are relegated to myth. You know, myth, if you look in the dictionary, is like, it means fake. It means false, like a fairy tale, like it's not real. But there's this kind of, I think we as people are adrift if we don't trust and take on these mythic or paranormal things, at least to just, you know, you don't have to believe them necessarily, but just feel the feelings that arise from them, if that makes sense.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, we're not, if we would just open up our awareness more, there's just multitudes of synchronistic events that happen to people, but we get so wrapped up on, I think, in our everyday busy lives and like I said earlier, people are a little afraid of this because that's sort of what we're taught, you know, from childhood, that ghost is something to be afraid of. Or if you hear, you know, your grandfather speaking to you after he's passed, then maybe it's demonic, or you're just hearing something, or there's something wrong with you, or, you know, all these things that we hear about this. But, you know, we interviewed a multitude of people, and they were all, they're all from different ages, different sexes, different walks of life. It didn't really matter regardless of gender, race, culture, or religious beliefs. People are having these type of experiences.
That is wonderful. Hey, we're going to have to take our second break. And for now, we're going to have to say goodbye to the free Dreamlanders. We've reached the end of the free part of the interview. And for non-members, thank you so much. Members, we'll be right back.
When should you subscribe to UnknownCountry.com? How about right now? Go to UnknownCountry.com and click on the Subscribe tab on the masthead. We offer subscriptions either by credit card or PayPal, either automatic renewal or annual or longer subscriptions without auto-renew. Plus, it's easy to cancel if you wish. Do it right in your account.
And do we ever need you right now? And do you ever need us? The new UnknownCountry.com is beautiful. It is fully functional. The whole archive is working. It's full of amazing stuff. Plus, this is the only place like it in the world. Keep it going. It's up to you. Go to UnknownCountry.com. You know what you have to do. It's only a few pennies a day. It's not a big sacrifice, but it means an awful lot.
There are hundreds of charitable organizations in the world, but you have to have a sharp eye to be sure your money is going to where it's needed and not into the pockets of overpaid administrators. That's why Whitley Strieber and UnknownCountry.com support the Mercy Corps. It's non-sectarian, it's lean and efficient, and it goes everywhere on earth that people are in need. When you contribute, you can be sure that most of your dollar goes right to the homeless, the starving, and the desperate. Go to Unknown Country and click on the Mercy Corps Foundation ad on the left side of your homepage. A $10 gift can put food on a child's plate and shoes on his feet. Unknown Country and Whitley Strieber receive no compensation from the Mercy Corps.
Whitley Strieber's nonfiction is magical, powerful, and thought-provoking. From communion to the afterlife revolution, there is no body of work like it in the world. Nothing even approaches it. And not only that, his wonderful fiction, from The Wolfen to his latest novel, New, offers reading and listening entertainment that you will never forget. And where do you find all this in one place? At Strieber.com. That's where. Every Whitley Strieber book available for sale is there. So don't wait. Go to Strieber.com and start exploring. There's only one Whitley and only one place to find all his work. Strieber.com. Earthfiles.com is Linda Moulton Howe's great website offering news of the edge of science and reality. Keep up with Linda's work every single day on earthfiles.com.
We are back with Brett and Julie Oldham. And before we took the break, we were talking about the fact that these things, you know, I honestly think that most people have had, even if not a full-blown powerful experience, at least a touch of these things. How to say it? You know, the angels have just caressed some little part of them and they noticed it. So I feel strongly that's true of pretty much everyone. And the people who may not have had the real experience certainly know people that they trust and can talk to them and heard these stories. So, I mean,
there's so many people like that and they're afraid to tell anybody. You know, I've did presentations and before I started doing any kind of talks on the UFO phenomenon, I was doing stuff on this on spirit communication. And I would, during these presentations, you know, ask people to raise their hand if they've had an experience. And it would be 85% of the people would raise their hand.
That's my sense.
And a lot of people after the talk would come up to you and say, you know, my husband would kill me for telling you this if he knew I was telling you this, that kind of thing. And then they would tell me this great, remarkable story. And women are a little more apt and open to it, I think, than men.
Sure. I think women are better communicators. That makes perfect sense.
But you know, that's changing somewhat, I think, because we were pretty, wouldn't you say it was pretty mm-hmm. equal, men and women in the book, you know? But yeah, I think it's just a matter of, you're 100% right that there's a high percentage of people having these experiences and they really don't know how to deal with them.
Here, I'll share one now. My mother died, this is going back in 2013. It was the summertime. Now, she had been in hospice care. She was suffering terribly from Alzheimer's. It was crushing for my brother, sister, and myself. My dad had died a year earlier, and my mom spent the last year of her life not knowing that my father, her husband, had died. She simply would ask where he was, and
oh man,
and it was really sad, heartbreaking. I'm at my house in Idaho. My mother was living in North Carolina, very close to my sister. It's summertime, and what happens in the summer, it's real hot where I live in the summer, but it's dry. And at night, when the sun goes down, you just open up the doors and windows. And I mean, you really open them up. No need screens. I was at high elevation. There's no bugs really that would come in the house. And so I'm sitting there at the desk. I'm just typing away and doing whatnot on the computer. And I hear this noise in the kitchen. And from where I was sitting at my desk, I could kind of turn my head a little bit and I could look in the kitchen, and there was a ferret in the middle of the kitchen floor. You know, so I got up and my fear was that it was going to run into the house and it was going to get under the couch. And I was like, so I like walked into the kitchen. Now this is like white linoleum floor. This is fluorescent lights overhead. And so it was totally lit. I'm looking down at this thing. It is like 3 feet away from my toes. Mm. And I look at this thing and it's, you know, a ferret is a member of the mink family, right? So you're, it's like, mm-hmm. It looks so silky smooth. And it looks up at me with these big, cute, wet eyes. And I say to it, "You can't be here. You need to leave." And the ferret looks at me and it hops out onto the porch. And then I walk out to the porch, and this is where we have our real stare down. And we just stare at each other, and it is so adorable. It is this beautiful, radiant creature. And then after a little bit, maybe a minute, it like hops off into the darkness, and I hear it going off into the bushes. And I thought to myself, my God, so I actually went online and tried to figure out what kind of ferret it was. I had a clear view of it. I looked online for illustrations a minute after I had seen it walk off into the bushes. And the only thing that matched was what's called a black-footed ferret. Now, a black-footed ferret was thought to be extinct until the early 1980s. They found a remnant population in Colorado and Wyoming. Hmm. And that is what I felt I saw. I feel absolutely certain that's what I saw. Anyway, so I called around the veterinarian and said, "Did anyone have a pet ferret that escaped?" I'm like, "Nope, nope." So that night I went to bed. I got up early, which is unusual for me. So I got up around 6, which I hardly ever do. And I went to my email and I opened it up and my brother said, "Mike, call me right away. It's about Mom." And I called up and she had an aneurysm and she was unconscious. And I had the talk with my brother, and my brother had talked to the doctors, and I was like, "Okay, I'll fly out." And I said the thing, "Do I need a suit? Do I need to bring my suit?" And my brother said, "Yeah." So she was not expected to regain consciousness. And then I held my mom's hand when she passed. It was 2 days later. It was my sister was there. My brother wasn't in the room. And it was a really important experience. As like me as a human on this earth, like I experienced something so vital. I could release my mom. And it wasn't sad. She had been in a very frightening place for the last year of her life. Now, I said to this ferret in my kitchen, "You can't be here. You need to leave." That would have been about 9:30 at night in Idaho. That would have been about 11:30 at night in North Carolina. Like I feel, like in my heart, I feel like I, without knowing it, spoke those words to my mom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the timing and the rarity of the ferret,
and the absolute just calmness of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, this was not a wild animal in my, right. In my kitchen floor.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the kind of events that, see, you were aware. And because what happens is, people, especially like we have a story about one of the guys that had an NDE and he was in a coma. And it's like that they are sort of one foot in this world and one foot in the next. And I think that they can and will use whatever means possible to communicate. and do it so in such a profound way that that's you can put those two, they can tie it all together. This has to be what this defies the odds. This has to be them in some way, you know. And I find, you know, personally, I find that kind of stuff like comforting.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was remarkably comforting to me.
Yeah.
Remarkably. Yeah. Yeah. Unquestionably. You talked about a story of fellow Mike. And I would love to hear that story. I would love to hear you share that story.
Yeah, it was a gentleman that I've known for several years. And I'll just interject real quickly. You know, the people that we interviewed for this book, we had some sort of personal association with all of them, and even though some of them are in some different countries, so it wasn't just random people like making up some sensational stories for attention. So even though there's a lot of different stories in there, you know, these people, you know, they're people that we could personally vouch for. On these stories. And Mike is somebody that I really respect. And he actually became a paranormal investigator because of this experience. But his dad got cancer. It's sort of a little bit of a long chapter, so I'll try to shorten it what I can. But his dad got cancer and he was in hospice care, but at home. And he had went into a coma. And the hospice workers had said, you know, he probably won't last the night. And Mike, his mother said that she will sit with him. And he went on to bed. And somewhere during the course of the night, the dad took his last breath. And the mom stayed with the body for about 30 minutes. And just grieving. And then she decided that she would wake Mike. I believe, if I remember correctly, that when she started to leave the room,
he woke up
and he said, "Where are you going?" And that type of thing. And he started talking to her. And this is a guy that had been in a coma for several days. And, you know, he started talking to her. And he started talking about, it was just like I had mentioned just a few minutes ago, where he seemed to still be a little bit on the other side and a little bit here. And he had been previously married to a Japanese woman. And he started speaking in Japanese to that woman, his first wife, on the other side. And she was communicating to his wife now and thanking her for taking care of him and being a good wife to him. And saying that she would be helping him on the other side. And he also started talking about that he had been talking to some Vietnam soldiers that he had served with and other relatives.
He also had prefaced all of this by saying he had asked them, and he called them them, that he could come back mm-hmm. and tell them goodbye and tell them that he was okay.
Yes. Now, I just have to interrupt. Did she like check his pulse? Was he like clinically dead to the best of her knowledge?
To the best of her knowledge, he was clinically dead for about 30 minutes.
My word.
And so I believe when she went to get Mike, that when he came back, she told, sorry, there's so many stories, it's hard to remember.
I know just what you're going through.
he wanted to take a shower.
He said, "Before you wake Mike, let me get cleaned up." And he actually got out of bed.
Which he hadn't done in weeks, months.
Yeah, he'd been bedridden for quite a while and went to take a shower, got cleaned up.
He actually took a shower?
Yeah, on his own. Like he had this newfound strength. It was just, you know, absolutely remarkable. And so then Mike, who was telling us the story, said when his mom came to wake him up that he thought that she was just coming to tell him that his dad had passed. And he was just absolutely shocked to find his dad like
in his own bed.
He got up out of the hospice bed and he went to his own bed. And then he said he was hungry. And so he sent Mike to the grocery store to get, you know, some of his favorite foods or whatever. And
he hadn't eaten solid foods in weeks.
And so Mike said when he got back from the grocery store, his dad was up in the kitchen and like helping to prepare the meal. And him and his mom were just like beside themselves, like, how is this happening? But of course they were happy about it. And he had rented a movie when he went to get groceries. And so he said they had a nice meal and they watched a movie. And then his dad said he was tired. He didn't want to get back in the hospice bed. He went back to his bedroom and started looking at old photo albums. And he said his dad was apologizing basically for everything he felt that he had done wrong. There was little things like he had apologized to Mike for not letting him ever use his tools or teaching him how to fix a car or anything like that. And, you know, they were sort of making amends. And then he says, well, I have to go back, but I'm not sure what I'm supposed to.
How it works.
Yeah. He goes, I'm not sure how it works. Like his dad knew that he had been given this one more day type thing. So Mike said him and his mother just said, I guess just go to sleep and wait for them to come for you again. And so that's what they did. And it didn't happen again the second time, right?
A few hours later, they hear him say, hello, hello. And they go back in there and he's wondering why he's still here. And and obviously none of them know how this works. But I think it was that same day, a few hours later, that he did lapse into a coma for the second time. And
well, the hospice workers had came over in the interim and were upset. They were asking, how did he get into his own bed? And they scolded Mike and his mother. And they were trying to tell them, no, he got up on his own accord, you know, and I don't think they believed him. And they got him in a wheelchair and got him back into the hospice bed. And then because he had slipped back into a coma again. And then he finally, he also told them that he would send them messages from the other side. And then he did die again a second time shortly thereafter, like Julia just stated. And it wasn't long after that they were looking for the stuff, though. But Mike said sometimes it was simple stuff, like when they took his body out, it had been raining but a sun came out and a rainbow showed up. But there was more specific stuff where they started seeing cardinals show up every day at the time.
The time that he had died.
And that cardinal was his favorite bird. And then once they acknowledged that, then the bird quit showing up. And then another time, and Mike was an only child. He was making dinner for his mom. And he asked his mom, he said, do you want to, they had a jukebox in their house. And he said, do you want to let me turn on the jukebox, listen to some music while I'm making dinner? And she goes, no, I'm just going to turn on the TV and watch the news. And he said, okay. And he's in the kitchen and he says, all of a sudden he hears like this music blaring. And he thought his mom had changed her mind. And he walked in there and his mom says, hey, why did you turn the jukebox on? He says, well, I didn't. And she says, well, I didn't either. And he went to check the jukebox, turn it off. And he says, it wasn't even plugged in.
And
as he's standing there, then it slowly, he says, you know, the old 45, just everything just kind of dies down. You know, the record gets spinning slower and slower. And then the whole thing just dies down and stops. And he said the song that was playing with Garth Brooks, If Tomorrow Never Comes. So they for sure considered that another message from his father. And then he had one more like really remarkable thing happen. He was across town and he lives in the Nashville, Tennessee area. And he says he hears his dad's voice in his head. And first he thought, wow, you know, what's happening here? And he smelled his
cigar
smoke too. It was the flavor of cigar that his dad liked. And so he hears his dad's voice telling him, you have to go to this Asian supermarket, grocery market, and get this particular kind of cuttlefish. And he's I guess didn't really want it. He's like, well, it's clear across town. He goes, I'll get it. I'll go back. And he goes, no, you have to get it now. And he said it sounded so much, you know, like his dad and everything, that he's like, okay. His dad was so animate about it. And so he turns around and he starts going across town. And he goes back to this market and he finds this dried fish. And he decides they didn't have a lot of it, but he decided just to get it all. And the cashier says, I'm sorry, sir, you can't buy all that. It's on special order for a longtime customer. And Mike says he knew it had to be his dad that they were talking about. And he pulled out his wallet and he showed him a photo. He says, is it this man here? And she says, yes, it is. And he's been waiting a long time for this order. He says, well, that's my father. And he's passed away. And this was on this was during the holidays. It was on Christmas. I forgot to add that little element to it. So she agreed to sell Mike all of the cuttlefish that they had. And as he's driving home, because Mike actually loved it like his dad did, he says he hears his dad one last time. He says, Merry Christmas to you and your mom.
I know. Just, I sat here the whole time you told that story with a big smile on my face.
Yeah, yeah.
This is really, I mean, I'm totally heartened by these kind of stories. So yeah, I mean, I'm sappy in that way. And I just, but so thank you. That was really great. And thank you for the book too.
Well, it was a pleasure writing it. We both, I think, really enjoyed it. You know, as you know, writing a book's a lot of work, but.
Oh my God. Yeah.
but this one, you know, it was really a joy to write for us, because I think we felt the same way hearing these stories over and over and over. And there's so many of them in there, no matter what kind of story it was or who it was coming from. It made us smile and it felt good. And we know that what all the people, especially the near-death experience people, wanted everybody to know, the end is not the end.
And that, if we need one lesson, that's it. Hey, you know, we got time for, if you want to tell one more story, that would be great. But I just want to say one thing. My friend Suzanne Chancellor shows up in your book. And I didn't know she was in there. And she actually told stories that I had never heard her tell me before. And there's a funny little thing. And so anyway, I'm reading the book and I've jumped around. I have not completed the book. And I did the thing that I'm guilty of doing, where I kind of read it all over the place and just start in the middle and read chapters. And as this woman, Suzanne, and she's like, well, this is really a remarkable story. And this is, and her partner is named Jack. I'm like, what are the chances of that? And then she's a hairdresser. And then I'm like, wait a minute. This is my friend. So yeah, so I know exactly what you mean, where there's this, and that's the same thing sort of happened with some mm-hmm. of my books, where like I mm-hmm. was dependent on my friends in this funny little field we're both in, you know, I was dependent on them to like share their stories with me. So when I look back at my own book and when I look at your book, and I can kind of sense that like, wow, there's this little camaraderie that's needs to be documented, and your book was a delight. So, hey, if you have one more story before we go, that would be wonderful. I think our listeners would love hearing one more.
We had one more near-death experience story. This man was in the military and he was on a kind of a transport train, for lack of a better word, going out to the desert in California for some
training
purposes. And he kept smelling, was it carbon monoxide?
Some type of gaseous smell
that made him very, very sick. And when they finally got to their destination, he was treated with some Compazine for the nausea, and he went into a full cardiac arrest.
Well, they made him stand. They made the soldiers stand in these train cars.
Oh, yes.
And where it was blowing in was, he couldn't move away from it. Like, he was breathing this for hours during the transport.
Right.
And he had a really, really bad headache. And he was feeling really nauseous and stuff, you know, so he went to get medical attention when they finally landed, not landed, but got to their destination.
And he had an injection of Compazine, which immediately sent him into cardiac arrest. They got him back, to which I believe he had a couple more doses of Compazine because they didn't know that he was allergic to Compazine. He obviously had cardiac arrest a couple more times. His experience was really interesting. He said his was kind of a metaphysical experience. He felt he was one with the universe.
Yeah. Yeah. He that's the only set way he said he could describe it, that he felt he was like one with the universe, like, you know, a part of everything.
Yeah. And he described it as, mine was more of a metaphysical experience. So that one was really interesting too, because it was a little different than some of the others, but he was very comforted. He lost his fear of death.
He said he felt, and this is a repeated thing too, that they felt a love so strong that they couldn't even describe it. It was the most intense, all-encompassing love when they got to this realm on the other side. And he said he felt the same thing. And a lot of the others did as well, where they become detached
to the physical world.
The physical world, and all material things were irrelevant anymore.
And that includes time and your sense of body. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've heard this many times.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm coming from this talking to people who've had both the UFO and the near-death experience.
Mm-hmm. And the only thing that kept him, the only thing that motivated him to return to his physical body was his wife, and he had a new baby.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what motivated him to return to his physical body. What we found from all of these near-death experiencers was a desire to not return to the physical body.
Mm-hmm. I've heard this before too. Yeah. I wanted to stay. Yeah.
In fact, a almost resolute, I don't want to go back. I'm where I want to be.
And and it was interesting too, because not everybody met up with the same type of beings on the other side. It's almost like their own perception of the people or the entities that they, you know, like Deborah,
had the angelic beings, what she perceived as angelic
but
beings.
Other people said light beings.
We had one that described it as light beings.
And they all spoke telepathically, which is another similarity between abductees. You know, most species that people who encounter are speaking telepathically. This was the case also with the beings that people that had these near-death experiences, when they would come in contact, everything was telepathically.
Another described the being as an authoritative voice that was telepathic.
Yes, thank you. These are wonderful stories, and I'm very genuinely grateful that you put this book out. Brett and Julie Oldham, the book is Afterlife Encounters. And how would we find this book?
It's available on Amazon, both in paperback form and the Kindle version. Afterlife Encounters, Ghost Spirits, and Near-Death Experiences.
Thank you so much. This has been a delight, and I'm sure the listeners are going to enjoy this too. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
I am going to read an excerpt from Brett and Julie Oldham's book, The Afterlife Encounters. This is from the last page. These encounters change people's lives in a positive way. The spirits of those who have gone before us have much to teach us, if we are willing to listen. They want us to know that consciousness continues after death. We detach from things in our material world when we cross over, so the love for those things is meaningless, and, in fact, could keep us from progressing in our soul's journey. They want us to know that love transcends death and is a bond that cannot be broken. From these accounts, we have learned that the fear of death is an unfounded fear. There is nothing to fear about death because, in essence, there is no real death. It is merely energy transitioning from one form to another. It is indeed the afterlife, a continuation of life, and a new beginning. The end is not the end. I would like to take this moment here at the end to thank Whitley for his trust in me to take on this project, to take on these audio interviews again. I did a podcast some years ago, and it feels a little rusty, but at the same time, really wonderful to be back in this seat once again. I would also like to thank Lauren Cutts for the intro music and the outro music, and Andrea Villiers on the gong. If you've made it this far, thank you so much. Bye now.